Welcome to Car Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm your host, Scott Benjamin.
And I am Kurt Guerin, and we are a man down today.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess we're not going to have Ben in the studio with us.
No, he got that escape, and he skipped town.
Yeah, he did. He was mentioning an escape, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that's part of what's going on today. So fans know, he will be back. I mean, he's just taking the day off, really. So yeah. He might be gone today, might be gone for our next show. Who knows? One or two, but he definitely will be back. He's just out running some errands or doing some important stuff. You know, so Ben, he always gets into some crazy adventures.
Yeah.
When he goes out.
So, yeah. Sometimes he'll tell you about them, and then sometimes he's real cryptic, you know?
Yeah, sometimes he
keeps things close.
Sometimes he can be a little, close to the vest or a little sketchy sometimes when he says what he's doing.
But, shifty.
This is something actually that Ben and I in the past have had I know we've had several conversations about what we're going to talk about today, and I felt that, you know, since it's just you and I, maybe we could have a similar conversation or kind of a revamp of that with some new information, maybe just some different stories to kind of pass around. But we're going to be talking about junkyards and, I guess, in the same sense, salvage yards. It's all the same thing, really. But junkyards and salvage yards today. And, Kurt, I asked you off air if you had much experience with junkyards in the past, and you said not necessarily. Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't personally. But growing up in the South, you meet those folks that are, I mean, I say this with affection, but I'm talking about the junker types. And they visit the salvage yard to find those parts that everyone hopes they find when they go to the salvage yards, you know, the parts that are desirable.
Now, these are the treasure seekers that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, those types.
Yeah, I understand. You know, the people that, and again, not in any way disparaging people to go to junkyards, because I am one, or I used to be one, that would love to kind of hang out in junkyards and gather things and find things and try to, well, at least do my best to do that. I never really found any gems along the way. I never found anything that was really worth, hanging on the wall or anything like that.
Yeah.
If I had looked harder when I was younger, I would still have some of those things that now would be classic items that would be great to have on the garage wall, you know, like maybe some old fenders or maybe, you know, a grill or something. But at the time, you know, you're looking at the stuff and it's like, it's not really old at that point, but now it would be classic parts. It would be something that, you know, you would look back at with nostalgia of some sort. But, you know, I would find, I would try to stop at places, you know, along the way. If I was taking a road trip, I'd, you know, if I was on my own, I was on my own schedule as well, I'd be able to pull off and, you know, check out the local junkyard in, you know, these small towns that I go through. And, you know, even if it's just, well, I always say this, like, even if it's going to be 10 minutes, but it's not just 10 minutes, you get kind of caught up in the stuff, you know, walking around and looking at the cars that get older as you go to the back of the lot sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and while we're reminiscing, I'll just say that I used to remember seeing junkyards, I mean, not everywhere, but they were more common. You drive on the country roads and you would see junkyards, you know, here and there. And nowadays, at least down south, they're overgrown with kudzu now. You don't really see them.
Yeah,
and the junkyards seem to be more, you know, they're organized businesses more so than they are just a bunch of cars out in the field somewhere next to someone's house.
Oh, you make a very good point here. So you're talking about, the old, almost kind of started, not by accident, but almost by accident. You know, they had a towing business or something and started to store cars and, then decided, well, I'm going to start selling some parts from those cars that I picked up. And, you know, they kind of, they evolve that way.
Yeah.
So they become a small-time junkyard, salvage yard dealer, or they intended that and they, you know, have a few acres of property and they want to become that. But it does require some maintenance. It requires bringing in new vehicles occasionally, getting rid of the old vehicles sometimes when they're pretty much picked over, you know, to the point where it's just a big hunk of metal that no one can really use, rusted or bent or, you know, damaged beyond repair. So there's some maintenance even with a small lot that's required. But we're talking about today, I think, in general, we'll go back and forth a little bit, but we're talking about the ones that are the big ones where there's an inventory list online and there are auctions that are held on the site and they host specials. They charge admission to go in because they don't want people just going in, because there's ways that people can go in there and actually make not a living, but they can make a decent profit for the day, I guess.
Especially if, you know, when they get the new cars in, because they have they rotate the cars a little more frequently than they used to years ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the old time junkyards as well. The kind, you know, that are just kind of heaps of cars that are piled in there, mm-hmm. you know, kind of willy nilly. And you can walk around and pick them, you know, pick out parts or, you know, look at whatever you want. And a long, long time ago, you know, when I was walking through some of these, you know, I remember being out in the middle of winter in the snow trying to uncover some things. And, you know, oh, there's an old 67 Mustang, and, you know, nearby you might find the Mustang emblem from it. And, you know, you could either purchase that, or if you were on the other side of things, you could maybe pocket that and walk out. You know, I never stole any parts. I'll be honest with you. I didn't take anything. I've been with people at places that have done something like that. I didn't think it just didn't feel right to me to be able to do something like that, to nab a part that normally, you know, this guy would have made a dollar off of or whatever. I just didn't feel right doing it. But a lot of people are okay with doing that and then buying something bigger also. You find a lot of parts walk out of junkyards. But maybe some of the coolest things I found, of course, you know, you find old vehicles that you're interested in, but maybe just kind of passing fancy, you know, like you can look at it and say, oh, there's a 57 Chevy body. I haven't seen one of those in a long time. It's kind of cool to look in and see what's left and maybe check out. They've got an old stereo in there. They got the old steering wheel, maybe parts that people still might go back and pick, but, you know, are kind of worthwhile looking at while you're there. I found an old car I went to high school in southeastern Michigan. And I was traveling up in northern Michigan, not the UP, but right at the northern tip of Michigan, not the upper peninsula, but the lower peninsula. And my friends and I were walking around this lot in the wintertime, and we came across, I think it was an old microbus, a VW microbus, had a parking sticker from our high school's parking lot from decades prior. So somebody, I don't know if they had, how it ever, you know, there's got to be a story to how it ended up where it did. Have no idea how it ended up where it did. But that same lot was one where, you know, you'd walk around and you'd find that they've taken an old camper top from a pickup truck maybe and put it on the ground and torn out the windows and put in chicken wire, and there were chickens living in there. And, you know, they have crazy things like that laying around, you know, that you're wondering, like, what is the story behind all this junk that's here? You're like, who's the oddball character that's operating this place? And that is the thing, that if you go and you talk to the owners of these, you know, before you walk around, you'll find that a lot of times you're going to come across some real interesting characters, some people that have great stories to tell if you want to listen to them, or, you know, maybe they're not so nice, maybe they're nice, maybe, you know, everybody has their own demeanor, and it's interesting to kind of figure out who knows what in the area, you know, like who's an expert on Packards or Corvairs or maybe British sports cars, or, you know, who has the market cornered on the import parts in this town, you know, because there some of these bigger ones have sections that are just strictly for imports, and some that are just for Chrysler and some Ford and some GM parts, and other lots, you know, are kind of all mixed up. You know, there's all variety of things that you can find at these junkyards. And I know that's over-explaining all this, you know, this long, long lead into this whole thing. But some of these lots, especially the newer ones, have an incredible amount of organization to them. And they're really meticulous about how they have them laid out.
Yeah. They thrive on keeping their inventory somewhat fresh and organized and moderating it to a certain degree. Although, as I've found out, there's a lot of shenanigans that go on inside of these places as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, by the customers or by the owners?
By the customers.
Oh, the customers.
Well, maybe
yeah,
the owners too, but I'm talking more about the people that go in there and, you know, rifle through the cars.
Yeah, you know, later, you know, as we get toward near the end of this, I would like to share some, I guess what I'll call junkyard etiquette with you, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. I think it would be valuable for people to hear that.
Well, I think so, too, in case you ever find yourself in a junkyard and you just don't know, you know, which fork goes on which side, where your soup spoon goes, that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, there's definitely junkyard etiquette, and people will call you out on these mistakes if you make them. You know, some people get not angry, but a little frustrated with your behavior if you're not doing things in the way that they feel is the proper way to do things. Because there are regulars to these. There are people that go regularly pick parts. You can make money by doing that if you know what to look for. And that's another kind of interesting angle of this whole thing is that, you know, if you know the valuable parts, keep your eyes open because you might just run across these at any point. You might be going for a part that you specifically need and run across something that you have kind of filed away in your memory bank as like, oh, that's something that people pay a lot of money for on eBay or on Craigslist or wherever. Mm-hmm. How hard would it be to pull that part out and sell it on eBay if you have an account? I mean, it might be pretty good profit generator for you. Even if it's just a small time thing, you know, like, you know, a part here or there, it might pay for the part that you're out there picking that day, which is a fantastic thing to have happen. I mean, if you're able to, you know, kind of make it a wash and get what you need as well, that's all the better.
Yeah. I feel like every town has this group of people, though, that go just for that.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, finding these little gems in junkyards is actually not as easy as you would think.
No, because there are a lot of people that are out there on the same hunt.
For sure.
Exactly the same hunt. And you can find all these places online, and that's another, I guess, boy, is that an advantage or disadvantage, Kurt? I don't know, because it's a disadvantage to you, I suppose, but it's an advantage to anybody that's willing to, willing to use it as that, you know, to kind of keep up on the new arrivals, because that's another section on these websites. If you go to anything, any of these part sites that I'll mention here, and I'm just going to mention like three or four to give you an idea of the names that they go by. It's, you know, Pull Apart or You Pull It or You Pull and Pay or You Pull and Save. They come in all flavors of this You Pull and something or, you know, You Pull Parts or You Pull whatever.
Yeah.
You Pull Crap. I don't know. Whatever you want to call it. But they, of course, have this stuff all categorized on their website. And you can search for your vehicle and they'll tell you, yeah, we've got one vehicle that meets your criteria. It's within this age range, 2010 to 2012 model year Honda Accord or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And they can't tell you specifically exactly what's on the vehicle. You have to go there and really check that out for yourself. That's one of the downsides, I guess. It doesn't have every part listed, but that's really impossible to keep up with, as we said, because there are parts leaving from that vehicle every single day, every single hour, probably, if I had to guess, on some of the more popular models. So it pays to get in on these things early. And I said that they have, you know, all these categories. They have tabs listed for brand new vehicles to the lot. They have vehicles that are, I guess you can call them gone. You know, they're like the last minute before we actually just scrap this metal because there's only a few parts left. A lot of them will have used cars for sale, which is kind of interesting.
That is.
So cars that have a clean title that you are able to buy, and typically they're damaged, but they are running and driving. Not a salvage title, nothing like that that you have to worry about, because as I think we've said on other shows, if you're going to buy a salvage car, you know, a flood car, a car that's been in a fire, or a car that's been damaged to the point where it can no longer be driven safely according to the insurance company that did the adjustment for it that said, you know, this is a total loss. If it has a salvage title, you have to have a license in order to be able to buy that vehicle. And That varies by state. If you search for your laws within your state, you'll find that, you know, there are a lot of different regulations and licenses that you have to apply for and different types of salvage licenses as well. Most often is the case that we're I went through a few of these states and checked out what it would take to get a salvage license, you know, like Texas and here in Georgia and I think Wisconsin and places like that, just kind of scattered all over the U.S. And I found that a lot of them require you to have a piece of property that is not your primary residence with a certain amount of acreage with, you know, you have to have a certain amount of insurance as well. And it's just really complicated, the, you know, the requirements and the fees, the qualifications that you have to have. And there's, you know, of course, the federal and state laws that come into this as well, including some EPA guidelines that you have to follow. Your property and your treatment of that vehicle have to follow that. So, you know, the draining of fluids or the capture of gases that might be in that vehicle, you know, whether it's refrigerant or, you know, whatever the case may be. So the whole thing is really an interesting process when you get right down to it. There's a lot involved with buying a salvage vehicle.
So the implication there is that you would be buying it to put on in your own salvage yard.
Correct. Yeah. You'd be buying a crash vehicle that you most likely would have to, you know, throw on a flatbed and bring it to your property and just dump it off in the lot, wherever it goes. Because a lot of them, as you said, we keep wandering away from this, but there's so much organization now, which is really fascinating to me. And I don't know if you've seen this or not. One of the places that I used to go, again, in Michigan, and I think this is common in a lot of junkyards of the past, where they used to just be piles of cars. Then they went to, well, we're going to kind of lay these out like they're in a parking lot. And of course, it doesn't matter if they're parked in, so because no one's moving these cars really, so you can park them several deep and, you know, make a kind of a grid work of them, and that's something that a lot of places still do. And then there are other places like the one that I used to go to now that I've looked at photos online, and they have started to store vehicles on racks. So you know, there might be three or four vehicles high, and if you need one from up above, you have to get somebody with a forklift to come out and lower that vehicle down to you and just see if you have the part on there that you need, or unless you can, you know, spot it from down on the ground. It becomes a little bit more complicated, but the yard itself can stock or can carry more vehicles. And you know, not at the expense of having to pile them on top of each other, which would damage panels, it would damage all the windows in the vehicle, it would bend components that otherwise would be useful. So this is a much better way to do it, I think. And the cataloging, I mean, essentially what we're talking about here, Kurt, is that things have just been really cleaned up quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the dirty, old, musty location that you might think it was in the past, or, you know, like grease-soaked areas. It's still, you know, you still get your hands dirty, and you still get dirty climbing underneath vehicles and pulling stuff out, but they're a lot cleaner than they used to be.
Yeah, it's part of the recycle process for the vehicles. They go through this life cycle out on the road, and then for whatever reason, they end up in a salvage yard. And then eventually, after they're done there, after they're picked over, they go on to wherever cars go next, I guess, scrap.
Yeah, they become soup cans somewhere,
right?
Yeah, eventually. Eventually. That's long down the road,
yeah,
hopefully.
Toasters and whatnot.
Yeah, they become the engine block for the next vehicle.
Yeah.
And there's big money to be made in this, too. Mm-hmm. I don't have any facts and figures about what, you know, the average salvage yard owner makes or anything like that. If you were to part out, let's say, your typical Toyota Camry, you're going to find that that Toyota Camry is worth many, many times the value of what it is as a complete vehicle in parts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you start piecing out those parts and they're worth quite a bit of money each, and it amounts to, as a total, way more than that car is worth sitting on the curb. Here's the other side of that. If that's your car, if you own that Camry and you suddenly realize, like, oh, well, crap, it's got a lot of stuff wrong with it. You know, the transmission's gone, the engine's gone. I mean gone like they don't operate anymore, but there. You take it somewhere to sell it for scrap metal, or you sell it, you know, to a salvage yard, they're going to give you just a few dollars for it. I mean, you're going to make $50 on it or something like that. It's a very low payout for you. They make a lot of money on the parts, and then they take the hunk of metal to the recycling place, which then will melt it down and make even more money off of that. But in the end, they're only going to make a few cents on the pound for those vehicles when they get rid of them. It's just a metal weight thing. And I've recently had some experience, you know, with metal recycling yards, and we'll talk about that later maybe. But it's an interesting business. It really is, to see exactly what's going on there and how once you take something that, you know, takes up so much space in your own home, you know, you've got all this metal laying around, you know, hot water heater and engine parts and, you know, whatever the metal is in your, maybe an old bed frame, something like that. Mm-hmm. You take it to the scrapyard to get rid of, and it looks like it's just a grain of sand on the beach. It's really nothing because these lots are so big.
Yeah.
But it's all very fascinating to me. I love the order and the process of the whole thing. And I mean, even though it does look a little bit haphazard at times, and some are run better than others, but for the most part, they're very well organized and very efficient about what they do. One thing that recently I've been thinking about, I need a couple of, I got road rash on a couple of my wheels on the passenger side. Or curb rash, not road rash. That would be terrible, especially in a car. I mean, maybe if I owned a motorcycle, that'd be more understandable. But no, curb rash on the rims. Uh-huh. And I'm looking like, is it worth it for me to put a lot of time and effort into these things and clean them up and sand them and paint them and try to make them match and, you know, all that? Or do I want to find a pull-apart place and just find two rims that are, you know, very gently used, because a lot of people turn, you know, in cars that have been wrecked on the other side or, you know, whatever, and you can get two rims pretty easy to match the ones I've already got. They're factory rims for a relatively low price. And I've already found a couple that are very reasonably priced. I mean, without tires, of course, they don't leave those on. But a lot of times you'll find places, if you want something like that, if you want something that a lot of people go there for, you know, whether it's maybe spare tire for your vehicle, they might pull all of those out and put them on a rack inside. Or if you want rims like I need, they're going to put those on racks inside, and they'll have sometimes hundreds of these rims to choose from. So, you know, some in varying degrees of condition. So, you know, they might have a couple nicks, or some of them might look brand new. Going to charge a little more for them, but, you know, still beats buying one from the dealer or brand new from the factory. So, you know, there's a lot of bargains and really good buys to be found there at some of these pull-apart places. I felt like I had to mention this, and you had brought this up earlier. We were talking about the salvage yard and Breaking Bad.
Well, that's what got me thinking about this topic when Ben and I were talking about the cars and Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And then in that show, anyway, the junkyard was a place where the characters would conceal a lot of their activities. The junkyard helped them do it.
What do? They crush the RV there, right?
Yeah. They also got the magnet They used to destroy the computer's hard drive that was stored in the police evidence room from the junkyard.
Oh, the electromagnet with the car batteries. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Genius move. That, right. That owner was named Joe, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and also he made an appearance in the sequel or the bonus, which was El Camino, mm-hmm. right, with Jesse. And he was going to pick up the El Camino. And then the load, oh boy, I guess I should say spoiler alert. A lot of people say that now, but if you haven't seen El Camino, turn it off right now.
I feel like it's been enough time. I mean, if you haven't seen it yet, you are not super interested.
You're probably not going to see it. Yeah. Okay, so he's going to come pick up the El Camino that Jesse escapes in, and then as he's looking over the vehicle to take it away and do the same thing as he did with the RV, he's quickly notified via this device that he has, you know, that tells him that the LoJack systems have been activated on it. So he hightails it out of there. And so that's all we see of him in El Camino. But he was back again. He was ready to do the deed that he did for them earlier as well. He's going to help them out, right? So that was kind of interesting. But stuff like that happens in real life, maybe to a different degree. It doesn't take too long to do a search where you can find people have, you know, tried to cover up murders in crushed vehicles. They would put a body in a vehicle, crush the vehicle, send the vehicle off. It's gone. And they think that they're, you know, completely free and clear of ever having any evidence on their hands, right? Not the case. They'll always catch you.
Well, Making a Murderer, that show or the crime took place and was concealed in a junkyard.
Sure. Yeah. So there's one example. I've got a couple others that are recent. And I know that these have happened in the past, and I'm not saying that it hasn't happened where they've gotten away with it. I'm sure it's happened that way as well. That, evaded capture, but some of them go back as recent as 2008. There was actually, this is a different one. This isn't maybe something, I don't know, not the same category maybe, but there was an accident where a customer was actually crushed in a junkyard, which I would assume happens more often than you would think. Not every day by any means.
I bet it used to happen quite often.
I bet it did when there were piles of vehicles and people were trying to climb up to see what's in that vehicle, you know, not wanting to wait around for the crane or, you know, whatever to bring it down to the ground level. I would bet that happened a lot. In fact, this one happened in Belleville, Illinois in 2008. A Honda Accord fell on top of a 47-year-old man that was in the lot just kind of checking for parts. Tragic story, I mean, of course, but another type of thing that we were talking about before is where there's actually a murder that someone's trying to cover up. And this happened, a double murder actually happened in 2016. And this was in Russellville, Arkansas. If you have any interest in reading about this case, there's actually a follow-up on it. They caught the individual that was running the yard. It was his deed, his crime, and he was trying to cover it up. But they did find they found two bodies in the car. It was two young kids that he had shot, and I don't know what part of the deal went bad here, but ended up shooting and killing them, and his family, the victim's families, actually found the vehicles that they were crushed in, and this is so awful. He says, so he's letting them kind of walk around the yard and look for him because this is the last place they were seen. So the family's walking around looking for, you know, evidence of what happened. They find, you know, some things. They find, I don't know, a cell phone, a shoe, whatever it was. Find something, but they find a vehicle where there's blood leaking out of the trunk. And yeah, you would think that would be a dead giveaway, right? And the guy acts totally calm about the whole thing and says, "Now, you know what? Here's the awful thing." He says, "A dog got in the car, accidentally crushed it. It happens all the time. That's just the way it is." But he says it happens all the time, and I was thinking, how many like stray dogs end up crushed in cars? That's awful. I don't know.
Well, he obviously wasn't telling the truth.
No,
so he was embellishing a little bit.
Yeah, he's just trying to, you know, sidestep.
Get away with it.
Yeah, exactly right. But anyways, it's a weird story. If you go back to Russellville, Arkansas, you know, online search, Google, whatever, you're going to find this story from 2016 with some updates later of, you know, they actually captured this guy and what he claimed and, you know, what was happening there. Gosh, another couple things I want to mention just briefly before we get to the etiquette.
Yeah, are they scary, though?
No.
You're kind of scaring me away from going to a junkyard.
No, you know,
ever.
I could have done a much better job telling that story if I'd really worked on it, but
it's probably best you didn't. Probably best we just breezed over it.
Yeah, exactly right. It's probably best. No nightmares here in this, not in this series.
Yeah.
How about something a little fun, then? How about that?
I'm down.
This is fun. And it actually is kind of fun to watch this. This is one that you'll chuckle at, and it's a short watch anyways, but it's something you could find on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I believe I did mention this when Ben and I talked, but you haven't seen this yet, so you might want to check this out. And other listeners or new listeners might want to do it. What's fun to watch is when they have these events at these junkyards, and they do sort of infrequently, but they will have, you know, you pay by, normally you pay by the component or by weight or however they deem that part valuable, right? Mm. In some cases, they will charge you a flat rate for anything you can carry. Now, okay, we've all heard of this, right? Like you put stuff in a bucket at a parts store and everything in the bucket is $10.
Right.
You know, whatever you can reasonably fit in the bucket is $10. This is, of course, all you can carry at a junkyard takes on a whole different meaning, right? So a lot of cases, they'll promote these and they'll have, you know, kind of a big setup where you have to carry your parts. Usually it's like 15, 20, maybe as far as 25 feet through an area like it's coned off, you know, like there's a start and finish line. Parts can't touch the ground. You have to be physically carrying the parts.
Rules.
Yeah, there are rules to this. And you can use seat belts as straps. You can make your own straps. you can use pipe if you find it, you know, a section of pipe that you want to use, or rope if you want to use that to make kind of slings that you can carry things. This is the craziest thing, Kurt. If you watch, you know, these, they're like 5-minute videos usually. And the ones that I'm thinking of are these guys would they would dig seat belts out of other cars, right? So they'd dig out, you know, the both, you know, the connection points. So mm-hmm. that's an easy strap to make, right? They would make a backpack out of the front seat of, let's say, a van or something like that, maybe. So it's a bucket seat. They put that on their back like a backpack and then have somebody load up the seat cushion, you know, as they lean forward so they can stack as much stuff on that as they can as they go across. I saw a guy carry a Volkswagen engine on his back, a van seat and a Volkswagen engine with a seatbelt, you know, like seatbelt harness over his shoulders.
Wow.
Sometimes they'll take an axle, put it across their shoulders and use that kind of like a yoke mm-hmm. and carry a full set of four tires with rims for trucks, like big trucks, I mean. Looks like they're in a strongman competition when they're walking. You know, like those ridiculous competitions mm-hmm. where they carry just enormous objects that you would think they
yeah.
can't move.
Yeah. It looks like strongest man or whatever.
It looks like that.
World's strongest woman.
And then you'll get other people that are just carrying an impossible pile of stuff. It looks like, I guess, maybe a big Dr. Seuss pile of things. You know, like yeah. it looks like it's kind of like curvy at the top. It's not balanced at all, really. And they're trying to balance it and, you know, going back and forth as they carry it and use their chin to balance things. It's hilarious to watch. Sometimes you think, oh man, these—you know—they're going to get a hernia doing this, you know, because some of these loads are so heavy. Other times, people just are happy to carry a bumper across and get that for $75, and they're, yeah. they're fine. But for the most part, the funny ones, the ones that you want to catch, are the ones that are doing these impossible things. You know, the ones that are, you know, again trying to carry an engine on their back, and these backpack things are just so funny to look at.
Do you have to be on 2 feet, or can you be crawling, or just kind of like, you know, shimmying across the ground? Because I feel like you could stack a bunch of stuff up on somebody and, you know, like have them just kind of,
well, that's a new
snake it across the finish line.
That's a new strategy. I didn't see anybody that was crawling. Now, I've only seen them carrying them.
There
like
may be a rule
up.
Against that.
Maybe. Now, I will tell you this. You'll see people that, and I watch this carefully. They will they'll get a hood from a vehicle. So that is like as big as this table that we're in front of here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put it upside down, and then they'll pile everything on top of that, and then they'll carry that. But as they're carrying it, someone will have a cart underneath that it's not touching, you know, that they're just like hovering above.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case it falls, they don't want to, you know, destroy everything. So, you know, it'll fall a couple of inches onto the cart. So it may look like they're cheating the system a little bit, but really they're lifting that item and carrying it across the line. So just kind of one of those fascinating, fun things to watch. I mean, it really will only take you a couple of minutes, but it's worthwhile.
I'll check it out.
You want to talk about junkyard etiquette now?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So I found a couple of people that were talking about this type of thing on YouTube, and those were the ones I found interesting because, you know, they can take you out on the lot and show you exactly what they mean. They've got examples of everything. You know, these are people that frequent the lot. And in one case, I think one of these guys actually works at the lot, so he's got some of the best pro tips that I've heard. There's one guy that I'll mention here. He only had 5 quick tips, and I'll be pretty quick with this one. The next one's a little bit longer, but we'll still buzz through it pretty quick. But this first one is 5 things to avoid doing at a salvage yard. That's the title of the video. And it's by a guy who goes by Robert DIY, and he's at the U-Pull and Pay lot. And I don't know where the U-Pull and Pay lot is, but it's somewhere warm. It looks like it might have been California. But he tells you what you should and shouldn't do, actually what you shouldn't do mostly at the lot. And he has these kind of broken down into courtesy and safety. So he's got 5 quick things here. And the first one is a courtesy thing, and it's bring your own tools. That's pretty obvious, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to have somebody borrowing your tools while you're there. And he said that How many times? You know, it's funny when you listen to this guy doing this. He's kind of griping about it a little bit. So he's saying, you know, I'm working on whatever. I've got, you know, my rear end up in the air, and I've got my head down into an engine bay, and someone taps me on the shoulder and wants to borrow my socket set. And he said, fine, but, you know, then I've got to worry about not only remembering that when I'm leaving, but I also have to maybe track you down if you walk two or three aisles away. I don't know where you are, and you might have taken off with it. I don't know. So bring your own tools. That's just a general courtesy to other people on the lot. You don't want to make a nuisance of yourself. The next thing is, he says, don't make a big mess. Keeping the walking path clean after you're done is important. That's safety and courtesy as well, as we'll find out. But I think everybody knows generally that if you've got a clean work area, that's generally a safer work area too. I mean,
That's right, Scott.
Thank you, Kurt. Yeah, I feel like I'm like a shop teacher up here, you know, like with a whiteboard. Like, listen, kids, a clean work area is a safe work area.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is people know this. They know these things.
Well, yeah.
They just don't care.
Treat it as if you were in your own garage, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to stumble over all this crap in order to get to the vehicle again the next time, and you would clean up your work area. A lot of people, you know, just find that very frustrating that some people don't.
Oh, it's super frustrating.
You leave parts all over the place.
It's like, you know, leaving your grocery cart in the middle of the road there, the grocery store.
Exactly. Okay, number three. Don't destroy other parts to get at your part. Now, this is a courtesy thing, obviously. Just be considerate for the next person, because whatever you decide that you can just kind of tear through to get to your part, you know, if you break things or bend things or take them off sloppily, you know, you pry things off instead of actually removing them, that might be the part that someone is coming to get. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's a common courtesy there. If you're going to have to dig to get to something, preserve everything that's in your way as well, and, you know, leave it off to the side for somebody else. You know, once they get there, they will be much happier with you if they find that, you know, you haven't destroyed the valve cover or whatever to get to your, you know, your springs or your lifters or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and also in a bigger picture of this is, if you look at the whole salvage experience as being a way to make use of stuff that's been discarded,
mm-hmm.
being nice to the parts you don't need helps that process.
Yeah, sure.
You know? So it's just better for the whole system if you don't damage parts that you don't need or that you don't intend to use.
It allows the system that you're there to take advantage of to continue, is what it does, really. I mean,
true.
It allows
yeah.
it to keep going. Because if they're not going to make any profit on this stuff, they're not going to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And how frustrating is that if you know they've got the vehicle that you want there, which is already kind of a long shot. So you get there and you find, oh, there's one right there. We do have one on the lot. They mm-hmm. go to find it, and the part that you need is there, only it's damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're back at square one, you know, where you have to go and find that vehicle and that part again somewhere else, or wait for another one to show up. So it just becomes a big frustration. The next one, I guess this comes after you've removed the other parts. Don't scatter parts to other cars nearby. So if you have to take off, you know, a tail lens to get to a wiring harness or a clip or whatever you need in the back end, take that tail lamp and put it inside the trunk of the vehicle, or set it back in place on the bumper so that people can see it. Don't throw it in the truck bed of the car next to you, because they'll never find it. And if they do, they might not know what it's for. So they might see this tail lens in that truck and think, well, there's a chance that it's the one that goes to this. I'm not sure, really. You know, I mean, it could be very confusing to somebody if you start scattering parts or throwing them into the interior of another vehicle or the engine bay of another vehicle. So,
but that's probably a good thing to do if you are looking for a part for a certain car and you don't see it, just check the vehicle next to it.
That's
just in case.
That's a good tip.
Maybe it's over there.
I think that comes up on my next page here. But
really?
You probably have been reading ahead. and the last thing, and I'll just mention this one quickly. I think this one goes without saying, really. But don't break glass or windows. I mean, there's no need to do that. And I've seen plenty of photos and videos of, you know, just a bumper that's just tossed through a rear window for no good reason. I mean, just something that, you know, somebody felt like doing or wanted to do out of frustration. I don't know. I don't know why somebody would do that. But again, this stacking of vehicles on racks is saving a lot of glass now that was damaged earlier.
Yeah.
So that's something that is a positive. All right. So I think that was a pretty good list of five there from Robert DIY on YouTube. So the next one is about, of course, junkyard etiquette again. And this is from a YouTube user called Bleepin' Jeep. And of course, this guy is focused on Jeep parts. So
mm-hmm.
everything here in this list, I've taken out the Jeep references, I think, to most of it, but most of them were concerning how to get parts out of a Jeep, really. But he had some great tips, and this guy had on a pull-apart shirt from here in Atlanta, so I don't have any—no, he's local, to us, you know, where we record the show. But I don't know in particular if he works there or just happens to be a huge fan of Pull Apart. Or maybe they were allowing him to film there, so that's why he was wearing the shirt, you know, a little promotion or something. But anyways, all that aside, he had some great tips, I thought, for what you should and shouldn't do on the lot. And the first one, actually what you should do really, is, this is a good tip. Remove your part ahead of time so you know the tools that you'll need when you get there. And you'll also know if you need additional parts. So take off that, I think he used a washer fluid bottle in the car at home that he had. And he said, okay, I'm taking this off at home, so I know I need an 8mm socket, and I need these crimpers, and I need, you know, whatever it was. He had a bunch of tools that he needed. And he also knew that there's a risk in damaging this connector when I pull it off here. It's a Christmas tree connector that gets damaged when I remove it. So I'll probably need to look for one of those as well. And it allows you to get every single thing you need rather than get home and realize you need just that one other part that you did see there and have to go back and get it again.
And if you end up breaking a clip or something, you kind of know to look out for that as well, or
exactly
or pick that up when you're there.
Yeah, exactly. Any hardware or anything like that that you might also want to look for, definitely that's the time to do it, is before you even go to the lot. The next thing is that when you get to the lot and you've brought your own tools, of course, wait to take all of your tools onto the yard until you check it out, until you go out there and make sure that, you know, the part that you want is on that vehicle. Because a lot of people will bring out a full toolbox, and they'll bring out a lot of, you know, maybe a jack and, you know, everything that's really heavy out there into the lot. And if you can save yourself the effort of walking all the way out there with that, you know, maybe sloshing through the mud or grease or whatever, and getting to the vehicle and finding that, you know, somebody had either damaged the part or it's missing or whatever, just saves your back in some cases, you know. So when you're taking out a piece from a car, a part from a car, just always bring the hardware, the nuts, bolts, washers, whatever with you. It just makes sense. I mean, just in case, because if you haven't done the step that I told you about first, where you need to take the part off, if you neglected that, maybe you'll need it anyway. Just make sure that you have the extra hardware with you. The next one, this is a clever one. If you want to kind of reduce the tools in your toolbox, you can always look around for a piece of pipe to use as a breaker bar. So let's say you have to remove...
Oh, for more leverage.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say you got a socket and you need some more leverage to get the spare tire off the back of, a Jeep. What do you know? So, you know, that rear-mounted wheel, he was trying to use a socket and didn't have enough leverage. But he went and got a piece of tailpipe from another vehicle that was laying right next door, you know, or next door.
Lucky him.
Yeah, right nearby. he grabbed the tailpipe and used that as kind of a great big breaker bar, and it worked perfect. So didn't have to carry it in his toolbox, and it was just there and available. Plus, you know, you find you need stuff like that, you have to kind of, you know, improvise on the fly, and that's always smart to do as well. This is a good one too. If you forget to bring your PB blaster or your penetrating oil, which a lot of people take with them in their toolkit, that's a smart thing to bring, is you know, because, you know, these cars are out in the elements, and who knows how old they are. Probably a lot of parts have never been removed. So bring some kind of you know, penetrating oil to get those parts out easier. You can always use brake fluid from any available car that's on the lot as that. So you might dip your wrench into it or a stick or whatever you've got nearby and kind of drip a few drops onto that nut or bolt or whatever is, you know, you're trying to break free. Brake fluid works really well as penetrating oil in a pinch. I mean, it's better to use the stuff that's formulated for it. But again, you can find, you know, brake fluid in just about any reservoir on the lot. You'll find at least a few drops you can get out of there if they're not, you know, completely full. Thought that was a good tip. Carpets and floorboards can be used as like protection mats if you're going to get underneath the vehicles, because most of these places are on gravel, or there's a puddle underneath, or there's, you know, maybe it just rained. Maybe it's a dirt lot and it's all muddy. And I know you're already sloppy, you're at the junkyard anyway, but, you know, why make it worse? Why make yourself miserable? You know, if you don't want to lay down in the mud and get underneath the car, take a mat from the back end of an SUV, or, you know, maybe a bed liner from a truck or whatever. Use that as a mat to lay on. Just be smart about it, and you can sometimes, you know, maybe save your back. You know, you won't get all those cuts and nicks and bruises on you. Or glass in some case, right? Oh, here's the other one. Okay, this is what you were talking about. Check surrounding vehicles for your missing parts. If you get there and the part that you're looking for is missing, but it looks like somebody had removed it to get to their part, look inside the vehicles that are nearby in the immediate nearby vicinity, because even if they left it out in the aisleway, maybe when someone came around to clean up the lot, because they do send people around from the facility to clean up the aisleways for safety, they don't know which vehicle it goes in. It could either go into, you know, this one over here on my left or on the right. They might make the mistake of throwing it in the wrong vehicle. So check that other vehicle, as you said, Kurt. Okay, here's another one. Oh, this is a good one, and so simple. always return your tools to the toolbox. So many people go there and they end up losing a good number of tools. And we all do this in our own garage, I know, and I'm careful about this. I have been for a long time. When I'm working on something down in the engine bay, I will often set tools, you know, here and there on the like on the rails of the frame up by the fenders, or you know, wherever it's nearby that, you know, I think I'm going to remember them, right? Mm-hmm. Set them on top of the air box or, you know, whatever. I don't know how many times I've shut the hood and then realized, oh, I left my screwdriver in there. I've left my, or it's in a, you know, it, the hood is allowed to shut. It's not going to damage it, but, you know, it's in a critical spot, or, you know, it'd fall off. A lot of people will do that at the junkyard and then leave. And then, of course, you got to pay your admission to get back in to find that tool. And oftentimes you just forget it, you just leave it. Or the next person that comes by will pick it up anyway. So a lot of lost tools at the junkyard.
But
if you just think about that rule, like once you're done with that screwdriver, put it in your wheelbarrow, your toolbox, whatever. Do it every single time. Don't just leave them laying around like you do at home, because you know, the consequences are a little more dire.
Yeah.
You know, you're automatically going to lose that tool. Okay, we've already talked about this a little bit, but keep your eyes open for special gems, as they like to call them, you know, treasures, that components that you might be able to list on eBay or some other site, you know, that are valuable to some people. Even if you're not there for that part, you might be able to pick up something that's valuable and worthwhile for you, or for somebody else, rather, that might turn a little profit for you for that day. So not bad. Not a bad idea. Okay, another good one, too. Boy, these are all really good. There are no full-size batteries allowed on the lot, usually. You're not allowed to carry in a car battery with you. And that's for obvious reasons. You might hook up components that, you know, would deploy airbags or, you know, whatever. That's probably a safety. I think it's a big safety issue, right? There's probably other reasons as well, I'm sure. You could start fires and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do, though, and I didn't know you could do this, you can use a cordless drill battery with alligator clips to test small components. Mm-hmm. You're able to test the operation of windows. Let's say that you're going to buy a regulator for a door that you have damaged. You hook that up to the switch and you find out that, yeah, the window does raise and lower as it's, you know, should. Or, you know, you could even check, I think he checked a fuel injector by clipping these together, and it made a clicking noise, and that indicated that it was working. Very clever ways to do this if you look up how to do it ahead of time. Don't just go in there and expect to be able to figure it out. One really cool thing that I saw him do on another Jeep, imagine that, it was a Grand Cherokee. He was talking about pulling an engine out of a Grand Cherokee and didn't know the condition. Of course, it's got a digital readout for the mileage, and was curious about the possible condition of the engine, mileage in particular. So he takes out the dashboard and hooks up right to the back of it. He probes the wires and figures out which one is, you know, positive and negative. Hooks it up and it gives it just enough power to be able to show you the mileage. You know, the odometer comes up. So this one, I think, had 130,000 miles. And he said, well, that's, you know, relatively low miles for being here. And it looks like it's in decent shape. I'll take a risk. You know, I'll take the gamble on that one.
I feel like getting an engine from pull apart is bad news.
Yeah, but see, some people are so crafty, so talented, that they don't even worry about that. They just throw it in the back of the pickup truck, and I'm sure it's going to work fine. I wish I was more that way. I'm not that level. The last one here that I'll leave you with is find an old wiring harness and use it for spare wire. Now, not just use it as a wiring harness. You can find any wiring harness you want, but here's the point, and I never thought of it this way. You know, they're all wrapped up usually typically in either electrical tape, or they've got, you know, some type of sleeve on them. But this is really clever because, you know, you go to the auto parts store and you want to buy wire, you know, for whatever project, an accessory you're going to put on. Typically, they sell wire in a few different colors. You know, they've got maybe three or four different colors, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're basic colors, solid colors typically. So you look at a wiring harness, though, it's got every color in the rainbow practically, and lots of it. So you might find 15 feet or 30 feet of wire that, you know, has a color that you need. And overall, this whole thing might have, you know, 300 feet of wire complete in it. So you try to figure out, you know, then what that wire is worth per foot. And it's definitely worthwhile to buy this wiring harness for, you know, $20 or whatever they're going to charge you for, as long as you have an intended use for it. But you've got every color you might need, and you can closely match the one that you have without any confusion. So, you know, even if you do have to splice in a different color or a different, you know, what a different lead, you'll be able to keep them all separate. You know, that you don't have a situation where you've got, you know, three red wires going to something and have to figure out which is which, you know, once you get at the other end without, you know, a little tab of tape that has a number written on it. You know, it's a lot easier that way.
Yeah.
So some really clever ideas. There's a lot of junkyard etiquette, a lot of junkyard videos. Man, I've been talking like a mile a minute over here, Kurt.
Any, yeah, junkyards really excite you, Scott.
Well, they kind of do. They used to excite me a lot more, and I'll admit I haven't been to one in a long, long time. And I kind of got, you know, the the taste for it again. I want to go again because there's a couple things I need for my car.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of am excited about, you know, seeing the way they've evolved, the way they've developed. I went with my last car. I went toward the end of its life to try to find some parts. Unsuccessfully, I didn't find it. But I think, you know, I'd like to give it another shot to see if I can find some of those odds and ends, you know, maybe a part that's cracked or worn on my car that, you know, I'd like to replace and just see what I can find. It's always fascinating because it's like, it's a bit like a treasure hunt. And you're so excited when you find the little part that you need and it's only a couple of bucks versus having to go to the dealer, order the brand new part, wait a few days. And not only, you know, the price, you know, the whole thing, but there's also, you know, the satisfaction.
Yeah, a little bit of a rush people get from this.
Yeah, a little bit, I think.
One cool junkyard you ought to check out, it's not a car junkyard, though. It's in Bangladesh, and I got to dance around this word and make sure I pronounce the city correct. It's in Chittagong, Bangladesh.
I'm not even going to try that.
Yeah, I think I got it right. And it's a ship graveyard. It started out in 1960 after a storm disabled a Greek ship there, and 5 years later, Chittagong Steelhouse bought the ship, scrapped it, and then the industry began.
Yeah.
And it turned into this massive just dump of ships and ship parts. And
what kind of ships are we talking about?
We're talking about gigantic ocean-bearing freighters.
No kidding.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So, there were no regulations here, and I think they're still fairly lax on the regulations.
Whoa.
So as you can imagine, it's pretty sludgy and just disgusting. And
sure.
There's kids and young adults out there working as scrappers.
Oh, they're just cutting metal off of them?
With torches.
Oh, wow. And they're probably like standing in puddles of oil while they're doing it or something.
Oil and just whatever, yeah.
Holy cow, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, I'm going to try it. Okay.
Okay.
Chittagong?
Chittagong, yeah.
Chittagong, and boy, you got to really be really careful when you say ship right after that, right?
Yeah.
Could be quite a mistake.
Yeah.
We'd have to pay for it if we had to. But that is so cool. I'm going to do that immediately after this because
I probably
love
see
that
the
type
oil leaking out into the ocean.
That's terrible. Yeah. That's just terrible. But interesting to look at, I'll tell you that. And you know, if it was nearby, that'd be a nice day excursion to go over and check something like that out. Because where else in the world are you going to find that?
I mean,
really,
it's a sight. And of course, I wouldn't think that this type of thing will be around forever due to the environmental impact. I'm sure the ship graveyard will eventually be no more.
Well, there's airplane graveyards, of course, out west and in the southwest here in the United States.
Well, and those are much more organized.
Yeah, definitely they are. But they're really cool to look at, mm-hmm. as well. I mean, they're fascinating to see. I wondered, you know, I've never heard this. Does NASA have any kind of graveyard like this where they store some of their old, you know, space junk that they've recovered? Or
I believe at the airplane graveyards, there are some space shuttles there.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I'm sure they have a bunch of other stuff, you know, like rocket.
Well, you know what? Sometimes you'll be in a smaller town, and I'm trying to think of where this was in particular. I went past one recently that, you know, they have a space museum. Maybe there's a story behind it. There might be an astronaut that comes from the town or something, and they'll have, you know, like... I'm going to make this up. I don't know if this is one or not, but a Saturn V rocket standing on end, you know, with the advertisement for the museum, you know, just 3 miles down the road this way, you know, on the main highway. They have stuff like that all over the place. So I know that, you know, these things are available. I just wonder how they get to them. You know, like, how do you access that? How do you, you know, get the permission to bring something like that to your small town,
mm-hmm.
and use it? And is that something that you could do, you know, as a private citizen, as an individual? Could you go and...
Yeah,
pick something
if you had
like
enough
that
money,
up.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, you got to have enough property for something like that too. I don't think the neighbors would be too happy. You know, you get a great big Soviet era missile on your property. You know, it might look a little bit intimidating. You know, you might be trying to make a statement. With
yeah,
that.
This is kind of on subject, but not really.
Okay.
And I don't know if you remember this or if you were living down here at the time, but there was an airplane. I think it was in Byron, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
off the interstate, and it was a restaurant.
No kidding.
It was kind of neat.
Big jet.
It was a DC-7 or something.
So like
an
big
older,
jet.
Well, it was an older airplane, a prop.
Oh, yeah,
prop
cool.
Airplane, but it was
pretty
neat.
Oh, prop, okay. Yeah. Well, it's still but a big commercial airline.
Yeah, it was commercial back in the day.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, I know I've seen service stations that have used that in the past. I don't remember exactly where. I want to say it was like I'm going to mess this up, but I think it was like an old Sinclair station or
mm-hmm.
something. It was, you know, a brand that we don't necessarily have around here anymore, or even, I don't know if Sinclair even exists anymore. I'm not sure.
That was the one with the green dinosaur on the
sign? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I've seen advertising and, you know, people talk about it still, you know, because they're, you know, the people that collect that type of thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, the petrol people. But Yeah, I mean, I know I've seen airplanes used as things like that, but again, it's fascinating to think of, you know, like this, the second life for a lot of these things, or even third life, really. I mean, once you get down to it, because cars that take parts from the you pull it site or you pull it parts lot end up back there again, you know, a decade later.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting
thought. For someone
thought.
To pick again.
Yeah, once again, pick it up, right? All right, so you know what? I think we've pretty much extinguished this topic, at least as far as this conversation goes. You know, we've got other car stuff episodes that have talked about junkyards and salvage yards and salvage cars and how to avoid buying a car that's been through a hurricane and all that stuff, you know, the everything that goes along with it. So you can check out our archives for that. And if you want to do that, the best place to go probably is iHeart.com. You can search car stuff, and that's the way you find our archive of, oh gosh, it's probably 900-plus shows at this point. So we've got many, many shows out there. And again, just do a keyword search, and you'll be able to find whatever you need there. And we are always on social media as well. So, you know, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, where we are Car Stuff HSW on all three of those. And, of course, you know, again, when you're at iHeart.com or even if you're on, Apple Podcasts or wherever, you can always leave feedback. Let us know how we're doing.
Always love to hear feedback.
Yeah, we're always
interested love
in that.
Ideas.
Oh yeah, show ideas is something that we are, always trying to get from our listeners because you know we want to make this show for you. We want to make it something that you like listening to as well. And we can come up with lots of ideas, but some of our best ideas come from our audience. So we really appreciate it when you do that. So, do that. And of course, tell your friends. You know, we're trying to gain listeners as well all the time. So, you know, you like what you hear. Hey, maybe you don't even like what you hear. Maybe you just want to, get your friend listening so you can argue about it. I don't know.
Or laugh. Or...
Yeah, that's right. Well, do whatever you want. But I guess that's about it for me, Kurt. How about you?
That's it for me.
Anything else? All right. I guess we will see you next time. And who knows? Maybe Ben will be back.
Maybe. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Car Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.